Are you in a long-term relationship? Do you remember when you first met your loved one? If you were lucky enough, your moments of intimacy were intense and fulfilling, spontaneous and, well, frequent. I say were because for many of us, over time, that fast boil changes to a slow simmer and spontaneity can just about go out the window. And sometimes too, disagreements and disappointments, even betrayal, can further exacerbate any problems you may be having in the bedroom. So what do you do about that? Well, we've got some relationship experts on hand, but we'd also very much love to hear from you. If you're in a long-term relationship and it's been working well, do tell us how it's working well. And if you've tried things but didn't, you know, find a way through that, we'd also like to hear from you. You can drop us an email and the address is lifematters@abc.net.au. That's lifematters@abc.net.au. Or you can also leave us a message on Facebook. Our two guests, Tanya Coons is a counsellor, sexologist and guest lecturer at Sydney University. And Bill Robinson is a long-time counsellor with Relationships Australia in WA. Now, before we get started in on all this, let's get into some of the basic questions. Tanya, can I start with you? Many people in long-term relationships grapple with this issue of, you know, declining sexual chemistry. Is that a natural thing that should occur?
It is, actually. I think when we first get together with our partner, we're kind of hardwired to find a mate. So we get this flush of hormones that helps us pair bond with somebody. And those hormones, it's called limerence, that period. It's kind of like the science name for honeymoon period. And in that period, we kind of have blinkers up. We don't see that they can be annoying like other people. We're very interested in them. They're very interested in us. And there's a lot of spontaneous sex. And that period lasts between maybe 6-24 months. And after that, those chemicals go away and people need to work at their intimate relationships. And I think a lot of people forget about this or don't realize that. Mm. And desire does gradually decline over a long-term relationship. But again, if you work at it, there's no need to have a problem.
So, Tanya, I take it for some people, when that desire starts to decline and you have to start working at it, so many doubts would start to arise in your mind. Maybe I'm with the wrong person.
Yeah, I get people saying to me often, you know, I'm not in love. I love my partner, but I'm not in love with them, because they think that that beautiful, spontaneous, lusty desire is the thing that they need to be feeling. And they don't realize that there are two types of desire. There's the spontaneous one, but there's also responsive. And responsive is like, oh, look, you've given me a foot massage and helped me wash up after the dinner, you know, and whispered sweet nothings in my ear. I wasn't thinking about sexy things, but maybe now I will.
Bill, when it comes to your work, you've been a counsellor for 30 years and couples are having these kind of issues. Do they broach it with you straight away, or is it a bit of a long-term conversation?
Sometimes they do broach it. You know, very much that's the reason that's brought them in. At other times, it's something that maybe doesn't come out until I've probably seen them two or three times. Sometimes, I mean, if I think it's an issue, I'll ask. But I think often, I understand people are coming to, couples are coming to see a total stranger. They're going to want to suss me out a bit before they're going to share some of those intimate details.
I can imagine. And is the nature of intimacy between long-term couples, relationships, often the main reason they would turn up to your door in the first place?
Yes, it is. Look, it's one of the big issues. You know, probably things like money and parenting would be others, but it is one of the major issues that people will come in with. And I'm just sort of following up on what Tanya was saying earlier. After that honeymoon period, the difficulty can be with people actually having the conversation, because in the initial stages, they probably not had to. It's all just,
it all happened
spontaneously.
It's all beautiful.
And it's not an easy conversation to have.
I'm losing interest in you. Let's talk about it.
Yes. And that's what people can, you know, if one or other starts to feel, oh, I don't quite feel that kind of spontaneous kind of thing that I used to, yes, it crosses their mind that maybe I'm not with the right person. But of course, then that may not be the issue, but the other person will immediately think, well, why is this person not as passionate as they used to be?
Yes.
Is it something to do with me? And that starts to make the conversation very difficult to have.
Calls are coming through. Erica, I'll cross to you. What have you got? Mm.
Well, we've got Jono calling from Queensland. I think Jono isn't his real name. And Jono, I believe that you, when some space opened up in your work schedule, that helped with intimacy.
It did. It was sort of inadvertent. So I had a normal, you know, 9 to 5, Monday to Friday job. I changed jobs, started to work the weekend, had the weekdays off. Wife wasn't working at that stage, so the kids had kids as well. So the children, you know, they were there the whole time, you know, at my previous sort of work life. And then I had these 2 days off during the week, which the wife was in, you know, no kids, they were off at school. So sort of the intimacy was inadvertently there all the time, you know, 2 days a week. So it was a fantastic job change that was sort of, you know, certainly perked up our life of it as well. So it was, fantastic result.
And were you actually planning for this, or was this kind of like an unexpected benefit?
Completely unexpected, never thought of it. So the change of, well, the biggest thing for that, you know, thinking a complete change in job was going to be the biggest thing. It wasn't. It was, this side was the biggest positive.
Jono, just on that, that's a fantastic result. Jono, just quickly, I just want to ask, how long have you and your partner been married?
20 years.
Congratulations.
Yeah.
Going well.
No, it was a fantastic result. Couldn't have scripted it any better. Yeah.
Tanya, can I just come to you on this? Have you heard situations like this with Jono where a work-life balance changes for some reason and suddenly things get reignited?
Actually, it's very rare. People normally come and see me with the opposite problem, and I'm kind of encouraging them to do what Jono found by accident, which is to make time available for yourselves. So I talk to them often, you know, that people in marriages have four hats. You've got husband and wife, and you've got mum and dad. And people often prioritise the parenting roles, where actually they need to prioritise the roles of the lovers, because that's the linchpin for the whole relationship. So I'm encouraging them often to look at their schedules and try and stick their elbows out and find some time where they can hang out and do some nice things together. It's not necessarily scheduling that they're going to have sex at a certain time, but it's like, hey, how about we take a bath together tonight? Or how about this Monday night I give you a massage and next Monday night you can massage me? And if those things lead into sexy times, great. But if they don't, they're keeping the two of you connected in a physical way.
That's great. I like the fact you don't say there has to be an expectation of it going all the way to sexual intimacy, but simply intimacy in itself means that you can go ahead with something that seems semi-spontaneous, and if it goes further, well and good.
That's right. I call it planning to be spontaneous.
Yeah, I like that. I like that. We're taking your calls today here on Life Matters about long-term relationships and how we keep that spark alive, what you might have done in your relationship to ensure that intimacy remains healthy. Or if you've tried something and it didn't quite go as planned, we'd also like to hear what happened in those cases as well. Brian, what's your take on intimacy?
Oh, hello. Yeah, I just wanted to say that intimacy can be outside of actual sex, and even though in our 17-year-long relationship, which has always been an open relationship, it's been like 10 years since we've had sex with each other, but there's still intimacy. There's still, you know, lots of skin-on-skin contact, which is very much needed and all that sort of thing.
So quite tactile, but not sexual.
Yeah, yeah.
And I've got to say, I have to ask these questions because, Brian, this is really intriguing. You're in an open relationship and it's been successful and healthy for 17 years?
Yes, yes.
There's been no jealousies, no worries, no concerns, no one feeling like they're not getting the attention they need?
No, no. I guess it takes two people of the same sort of ilk that both have that sort of separation between what sex is and what connection is. So we're successfully done that, yeah.
Well done. Congratulations. Thanks very much for taking part. That's Brian there in Adelaide. You can take part as well. It doesn't have to be, of course, Brian's situation. It may be something, you know, within the mainstream of relationships in terms of long-term that you might want to discuss with us. And as we mentioned earlier, everyone's been fantastic so far. Try and keep the language fairly parental guidance oriented. And also, if you want to use a different name just to protect some privacy, go right ahead. We don't mind at all. Is there any texts or Facebooks we can share there, Erica, on that?
Yeah, there's an interesting text that's come in which says there's an old Japanese saying that after the young couple fall in love, on the fourth day they should throw themselves off a cliff because that's about as long as it lasts. But I think that we can aim for a lot better than that.
Yeah.
But I guess a cynical view, perhaps.
Make it a small cliff in case you want to recover. Bill, can I ask you about this? By the way, if you just joined us, our guests today are Tanya Coons, who's a counsellor sexologist and guest lecturer at Sydney University, and also Bill Robinson from WA, who's a couples counsellor and manager with Relationships Australia. Bill, when it comes to pleasure and sexual pleasure, and let's be honest, let's call it what it is, orgasm, there's still a disparity, is there not, between how many times in a relationship women will achieve orgasm compared to men? And I'm wondering if that's still a factor for people in long-term relationships.
Gosh, look, it's certainly a factor, but I'm not sure whether it's a difference particularly between men and women. I think the reality is that everybody in every couple is different.
Right.
And, you know, we talked about the conversation earlier on. I think when people are having this conversation, one thing they'll have discovered probably in the honeymoon phase of their relationship is the sexual kind of pleasure that they both like. Won't have had to work at that. They'll have discovered that. The next thing, though, is as time goes on, will be sort of having that conversation and sorting out maybe the things that one partner really enjoys, the other one doesn't, but is prepared to meet their partner and go along with it. And then, of course, there are those other areas where one person, you know, might be particularly attracted by, you know, a form of sexual expression, and their partner finds it just quite unacceptable.
They must be hard to negotiate where there's a no-go area for one of the partners.
Well, yes, it really comes down then to, and this is would be, you know, very different, as I say, for every couple, really negotiating, look, you know, can I actually meet you on this? Or am I compromising myself? Because, you know, for someone, say, to agree to some form of sexual activity simply because they know their partner will give them a terrible time the next day if they don't agree to it, well, that's not really, that's not really consent. It might be legal, but it's not really ethical. And it's not a good kind of pointer to ongoing intimacy.
Tanya, can I just ask you to come in on this? Because I heard you exclaim at something that Bill was saying there. What would you like to add there?
Lots of things. When somebody's sort of being forced into something, that is coercion. I think these conversations, Bill's very right. It's very hard for people to talk about sex. I think a lot of people just hope that their sexual preferences will just osmose themselves over to the other side of the bed without conversation. But it doesn't happen like that. We have to use our words and talk to our partner about the things that work for us and the things that don't. And I'll often get couples coming in to see me with one particularly angry person that they're not getting the sexual things that they like. But and they're trying to make their partner wrong for not giving that to them. And I don't believe in the right and wrong approach. I think we need to look at where's the area of overlap for both of the people? Where is the area where there is pleasure? And rather than taking a performance or an outcome focus, let's have a look at what's really pleasurable for the two of them and where they overlap. And I've seen things where people have come in and say, unless I have a threesome, my relationship's over. And after some negotiation and looking for compromise, and I stress that a compromise is win-win, it's not acquiescing.
Tanya, just on the issue of pleasure and making things enjoyable for both parties, do you sometimes find in your role that it's actually an educative one in terms of educating both couples about the female anatomy and how to make it really sing?
Oh, goodness me, so much. I think it was really interesting talking about the men having more orgasms than women. That's a very true fact. There's a lot of research done on the orgasm gap where 95% of straight heterosexual men will have an orgasm every single time they have sex, where it's 65% of straight heterosexual women. And I think that's 87% of gay men and 83% of gay women. So it's a really big gap. And we're attributing that to people don't understand how women's anatomy and arousal works. And it wasn't only until maybe 12 years ago that we understood the full anatomy of how ladies arouse. So having to talk to people about how this works and having them to treat female arousal separately to men, they don't arouse the same way and in the same time frame. So I do a lot of chat about how things work, how things have to start in the head, how the body has to warm up and do all of these things before you can get to the home stretch stuff that people tend to be in a hurry for.
And Noreen has called in. She's visiting from England and she's been with her husband for 35 years. I think she's got some interesting perspectives on this. Noreen, how have you kept intimacy alive in your relationship?
We just have a lot of funny, quirky things. You know, we just... I'm calling from... Well, I live in Sheffield in the north of England, in the UK, and my husband's from Yorkshire. I just tease him a lot, and we don't take things too seriously. You know, we just say a lot of funny things, and then it's kind of more spontaneous. I think that's what you have to do.
Noreen, it's Michael here. Yeah. Without scaring the horses, can you give us an example of maybe a light, funny thing you would say?
Well, it's a bit intimate, really.
Okay, fair enough. I just thought I'd ask. Always curious.
And Noreen, can I ask, was it always like that between you or did at some point you have to sit down and go, oh, we need to kind of help things along a bit, work on your intimacy?
Well, sometimes I used to say, I wish you'd talk to me more and I wish that could be about anything, really. It's more about that. I just think as long as you keep that spark alive, you must make sure that doesn't go, you know, and get too hung up about other things like mortgages or money matters or things like that. Because at the end of the day, those things are always going to be around, if that answers your question.
That's great. No, it does actually. And I like the fact after 35 years, you've been keeping it light. I think that's fantastic. Yeah. I might actually go to some text here as well. People have been writing some great stuff. Someone says here, Michael, I met my partner at 41 years old. And so she was 41, or he was 41, and she was 38. I work away on a 28 days on, 28 days off roster. 20 years later, spontaneous sex is still a daily event, says Ken. From Matt, 16 years and counting in a same-sex relationship with a lovely young man from Japan. Honesty, transparency and lots of laughter keep it fresh. Talk openly about the hopes, fears and desires. While the sexual intensity of our first years isn't our reality today, we still enjoy sex regularly and continue to be fascinated by each other as we grow as people. The greatest aphrodisiac is the mind, and our increased knowledge of each other replaces the more shallow, physically motivated act, and it's genuinely fulfilling, says Matt. What a great text. Thank you so much for that. And we're taking calls as well. If you'd like to join in on our long-term relationship conversation, how it's been working for you, what's worked, what needs to work better, and you could pass on some advice, that'd be great to hear as well. And our guests today are Tanya Coons, counsellor and sexologist and guest lecturer at Sydney University. Erica Voles is with me in the studio. And from Western Australia, Bill Robinson, couples counsellor and manager with Relationships Australia. We've already touched on this a little bit, Erica, but I think I might ask our guests a little more about the nature of consent, because it's already been raised once, and I know Tanya responded to Bill by saying that scenario sounds a little like coercion. Bill, can I ask you, as a long-time counsellor, do you have couples coming in and maybe not using the word consent, but that's at the heart of what's going on?
Yes, we do sometimes. And look, I'd quite agree with Tanya. That was the example. It's I suppose it's when that very negative cycle gets set up, where really one person is having sex with in the marriage or in the relationship simply to keep the peace and keep the other person happy, and the problem with that is, and you know, that can be for a variety of reasons. It can simply be that you know, one's got more energy than the other, one's working harder than the other, or the libido is different. When they get into that pattern, the trouble is, it means that the person for whom it's become a chore is actually going to be now deprived of a happy sexual life.
Right.
And
that's, right.
That's often the angle we take to say to someone, look, if you're having sex for this reason, you're really missing out, because it should be meaning a lot more than this. This is only really, you know, going to work and get better for you when you can talk about this and get to a position where both of you are happy and both of you are wanting what's going to happen.
Tanya, I would imagine that in your practice you strike this issue quite a lot. When you're working with couples and one partner is kind of consenting, acquiescing, but really they'd perhaps rather be reading a book, how do you get them to listen to each other's needs and kind of create a space for intimacy?
You know, the second most common reason that women have sex is to stop their partner asking. It's very, very common. And people can have a lovely time, even if that's their motivation for saying yes, right? I think people's libidos fluctuate over time and they don't always match. In fact, they very rarely are in sync. So it's looking at what would work for people. And I talk a lot about relationship sex, and that is sex that weaves its way around what's happening in your relationship. So it could be, oh, sweetie, I'm really tired tonight. How about you do 90% of the work and I do 10, right?
Yeah.
And there could be a haggle, you know, what about 60-40, you know, 70-30, and we've got a deal. And everybody knows what's happening there. Or how about why
that
not
reminds
none of
me
us?
Of Noreen, if I can say, Tanya, because keeping
yes.
it light, negotiating, but keeping it light.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
And it could be like, well, how about one or none of us has an orgasm tonight? For some people, it's a big palaver to get there and they know they've got to get up early and go to the gym in the morning, but they do want to connect with their partner. Or how about we just lie here and stroke each other and that's enough for tonight? Or how about you pleasure yourself and I'm here with you and I'm cuddling you and encouraging you? Mm. Like, there's a whole spectrum of things that you can do that are very, very intimate that don't have to be the whole box and dice of sexual activity.
Kelly's with us from Victoria. Now, Kelly, congratulations. You've been married 28 years and you have children. And how have you done it? How have you maintained that intimacy? Kelly, can you hear us?
Oh, hello. How are you?
Yeah, good. Are you okay? Are you driving?
No, I'm just pulling up now. Thank you.
That's all right. Yeah, we were just asking you how you've maintained intimacy with 28 years of marriage and children.
Well, I was just saying that we, from a very early age with our children, talked about how we needed time as parents together, and for mum and dad to be good parents, we actually needed to have a good relationship ourselves. So we always made a point of, when we were going away together or going out for dinner, we'd say that to them so they knew it was a priority. So with other friends, they felt it difficult to leave their kids, but now they're 18 and 14 and they say, right, you two, you need to get out and go out for dinner now. You know, they sense a little bit of, we haven't had time together. So I think that's really helped us. And, you know, we've had our ebbs and flows, of course, as normal couples, but I think having our kids sort of on board, you know, making sure that we're, you know, connecting is really fantastic.
It sounds like you've got it worked out very yeah. well. So the children themselves are actually recommending when you reconnect.
Absolutely, yeah. You know, as I said, from a very young age, we'd say, Mum and Dad are going out for dinner because we need some time together. Well, we're not talking about you. We're just a normal couple. And they've heard that from a very young age. So now they can sense if we haven't had a lot of time together, they'll say, oh, you two should go out for dinner. So it's really great.
Jackie, thanks. Sorry, Kelly, thank you very much for pulling over and taking the time for that. Bill, I might come to you because someone's on the back of what Kelly's just said. Someone's already texted in and said, should we schedule? I'll ask you both this, but to you first, Bill, should we schedule intimacy?
Yes, I think at some stages in a relationship we have to. And, you know, we like things to be spontaneous, but actually it can be quite fun to plan You know, I mean, people often say with a holiday that the one of the best parts of it was the planning.
Right.
And sometimes, you know...
Well, the actual holiday itself was terrible, but the planning was great.
Well, hopefully not. But, well, and hopefully in our area that won't apply. But,
no.
But no, I think some, you know, sometimes it gets people back into that kind of almost conspiratorial kind of frame of mind when they were first courting and they worked out how we could get a bit more time together, you know. So the planning can be quite exciting. I was really, the other thing was, though, with the last caller there, I was really encouraged by what she said, because it's so important for couples, and just with the busyness of life today and with the demands that are on us, because, I mean, in a lot of relationships, both partners are working and they've got children and they're involved in their children's activities, that the relationship can just get pushed onto a back burner. And often I think our work is really, I think, educating people to say, look, nurturing your relationship in the first place is going to make you much better parents.
Yeah. Bill, that's great. Tanya, very quick comment.
I agree with Bill on that making time. And this is the planning to be spontaneous stuff that I say. You know, sometimes I say to people, can you, you know, go to your bedroom and say, Mummy and Daddy are having cuddle time now. You know, use it age-appropriate language for your kids. I think it's really important for the kids to understand that sometimes you need space. And then in that time, that's your sort of planning to be spontaneous stuff. It could be like, let's have naked TV night tonight, where we just watch telly in our underwear or naked. Or we're having a bath or having a shower or doing things that connect us. And again, not that outcome focus, focusing on the pleasure of connection.
Can we take our underwear off for the shower? Is that okay? I'm just checking. Yes. Just checking. All right.
Jackie has called in from Adelaide. And Jackie, you've got, you've found your own ways of bringing some spark to the relationship?
I have. My husband and I, Craig, have been married for 25 years. And one of the things that we really focus in on is flirting with each other throughout the day. And what I found previously in our relationship, often we would wait until we got into bed before we started with our intimacy journey. And I love what Tanya's saying about the orgasm gap. And I realised that for myself as a woman, I need the foreplay and the flirting to start way before we get into the bedroom.
So true.
That's so great. Thank you so much for that. And we might go from Jackie to Steve. Steve, we want to squeeze you in because I believe you've got a story to tell. You've been married 36 years.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. And in the first 6 or so years, the sex was intense and frequent, and I suspect that's probably quite common. But as we've grown older now, we tend to have settled down to a pattern. So my wife often tells me we can have 4 to 5 bad sessions of sex, and then the 6th session or 7th or whatever it is, the lights sparkle, the rockets go off, the earth moves. So we've grown to accommodate each other. You know, it's not that intense, really high physical, high emotional stuff. But we've learned as we've grown older that it's not planning, but we take our time and we get there, you know?
But what you're talking about here is that if you're at peace with the fact that not every one of those events is going to be amazing, there's a depth that goes with that knowledge because you know each other so well and there's a lovely peace about that.
Exactly right. And throughout the day, I often compliment my wife and tell her she looks beautiful and she's got a great bum and that that kind of stuff.
Fantastic.
Because we tend to forget that, you know?
Yes, we do.
And after 36 years, you're right. It is that relationship that is now really deep and the undercurrent is peaceful and accepting, you know?
Well,
and that works for us.
Well, I couldn't have thought of a better way to finish off our conversation about long-term relationships. Stephen, thank you very much indeed. He's from Queensland. Thanks to all our calls in Texas. And also thank you very much to our two guests who've provided some insights and I think been quite delighted at some of the comments you've made over the course of this talkback. My guests have been, along with Erica Voles, have been Tanya Coons, who's a counsellor, sexologist and guest lecturer at Sydney University, and in Perth, Bill Robinson, who's a couples counsellor for Relationships Australia. Tanya, Bill, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you, Michael. It's been enjoyable. Thank you.
And Erica Voles, I'll catch up with you a bit later on in the hour.
Touch base later.
You're listening to Life Matters.